Christ, and welcome to the 24th ordinary meeting of the 174th session of the Literary and Scientific Society. Last debate of the year. And tonight we're debating, this house would not fight for king and country. The Literific debated this motion in 1933, and at the time 124 votes went to the proposition and just 104 votes to the opposition. How things have changed. But for its 90th anniversary, we're going to debate it once again. But before we get into the order of business, we had our AGM and have a new council. So if you would like to stand up and wave, so different than the other one. So many new faces. But we do have one difference, and that is that a prominent member of the society who has been on council two times is leaving us to join the Trust, and that, of course, is Ryan Hoy HLM. And on behalf of the Society and the Council, I'd like to present you with... Bon Laporte!
Thank you.
So,
I will greet this alone in my flat.
He will obviously not be forgotten. So are there any Council... Are there any council announcements?
Yet.
Any council announcements?
Yet.
Tom?
I think it's the first weekend of June. There is an online conference hosted by the New York Irish Centre or something like that. Across three different days, there are, I think, 5 p.m. for each of them. There's one about poverty, about one with the Good Friday Agreement, and one about women's rights, both here and in the South and in the US. So if anyone's interested in any of those, come see me afterwards sometime tonight to get more details.
Any other council announcements? Darwin?
Someone has pinned 7-5 West Road. I will be, so I'm convening. Basically, if anyone's interested in competing either over the summer, there's a public competition in Trinity IV, Carlos Ford Open, and all the different competitions over the summer. If you want to drop me a text at some point, I mean, if you want to do that. Also, if you're interested, maybe start, if you're interested in getting into competitions for next year,
is that all of the council announcements? Yep. And now I'll invite Sam Hazlitt up to give the minutes of the last meeting.
I'm lost in there. Bear with me. There we are. On the 30th of March 2023,
you people disgust me. The 30th of March 2023, the Queen's University of Belfast, blah blah blah, convened for the 23rd ordinary meeting of the 174th session for the motion, "This House believes Home Rule was Rome Rule." As usual, meeting began with announcements. Dermot Hamill raised the final debate of the year with the updated motion, "This House would not fight for king and country," encouraging speakers to register their interest. Ryan Hoy, HLM, thanked everyone who attended the conversazione. President Tasman McSparran raised the upcoming annual general meeting to be held on Monday the 17th of April. Following a reading of the minutes, the meeting moved to members' business. Noah Barnley, Jesus, raised Colm Eastwood's response to poor SDLP polling and asked the House's view on his proposal of Northern Ireland rejoining the EU. Don't remember that. Responses were heard from Dermot Hamill, Ciara Sweale HLM, Ryan Hoy HLM and Tom Burns. Terence Metcalf raised that the President of the United States, Joseph R. Biden Jr., as it's written here, thank you, Toft, was coming to Belfast on the 11th of April. Responses were heard from Sam Hazlitt, Noah Barnley, John Lavery, Dermot Hamill, and Ryan Hoy HLM. The meeting then moved to President's questions. Noah Barnley asked the President how she feels sounding like Eeyore from Winnie the Pooh. President Emeritus Daniel McCormick asked whether Rory McSparran successfully poisoned the President. Dermot Hamill asked if the President comes down with the flu, could that mean the flu had cooed her? Intellectualism at its finest. Ryan Hoey asked whether the President had eaten breakfast because of how ill she is. Dermot asked how the President is alive. Right. Terence Metcalf asked whether the President feels the French are to blame for her demise. The President then condemned the French flu. Right. After President's questions, the vote of prior opinion was held. There were 9 votes for aye, 6 votes for nay, and 12 abstentions. The proposition had it.
First on the proposition was Peter Hutchison. He began by giving context on what Home Rule was. He read the preamble to the Irish Constitution and quoted Mary Lou MacDonald, two things I thought he was very likely to do, when she was asked whether... when she said there was merit in unionists believing Home Rule was Rome Rule. First in opposition was Terence Pringle Metcalfe, Esquire. He said Rome Rule was instrumental in his sexual awakening. which was meant... Terence, we will miss you. which was met with gasps and laughs from the audience.
Just as it was
there now. He argued that Home Rule was hitched to the Orange argument and that the Irish adopted a rigid form of a la carte Catholicism to beat the British with. Second on the proposition was the Right Honourable Ryan Hoey, CBE, HLM. You clearly have far too much time in your hands. He began by arguing that Home Rule was perilous to religious freedom, citizenship in the British Empire. He then said Monty Python's The Meaning of Life represented what it is to be a Protestant, and read a passage from the sketch Protestants and French Ticklers. Okay. Second in the opposition was Cormac McSparran. He argued that the Church of Ireland was set up to correspond with the Church of England, but the Irish generally practice Catholicism. He then said that Ireland did not follow the Catholic Church like other Catholic European countries and chose ideological pragmatism over blindly following the Church. The final speaker of the evening was Dermot Edward Carson Hamill. He noted that the opposition offered a whitewashing of history and that the change in the Protestant population from 12% to 3% in the South showed the significance of the Catholic Church. He later noted that Northern Ireland being a Protestant state for a Protestant people was in response to the Irish Free State being a Catholic state for a Catholic people. The final speaker in the opposition was President Emeritus Daniel McCormick. After returning from the bathroom just as he was about to speak, he argued that the proposition had not proven that Home Rule was Rome Rule, as they did not address the actual governance of Ireland under Home Rule. He argued that the history shows that the Irish rejected and warped the Catholic Church policy. Wrapping up, he noted that Unionists left an Irish Free State of their own will due to personal preference. Questions were heard from Tyrone Tracy, Noah Barney, Ciara Swale and Roisin Keenan. Following the debate and questions from the House, the Lord and Speaker ability took place. What?
Sorry, nothing.
Yeah. One vote for the proposition, 25 votes for the opposition, and one abstention to the opposition had it. May I take the minutes as read?
Aye.
Thank you, Sam, for that very eloquent reading of the minutes. And now on to private members' business, where anything you've seen in the news this week or anything you really want to talk about, you can bring up now. So does anyone have any? Please state your name for the minutes.
So Tories have announced that there's going to be a budget for Northern Ireland.
Woo!
The press around it was really fucking scary. They've also introduced a bill today so that we can have no executive for even longer, because why have good governance in Northern Ireland would be just a civil servant? Because they'll do anything but institutional reform. So what we're seeing is the threats of essentially just massive cuts, which is really, really great. So if you enjoy public services, enjoy not seeing them anymore, because the choice is going to fuck out.
Anyone else on the budget?
We've got a lot of press has presented the budget, and basically, because when the executive was sitting, they were so financially incompetent, they overspent by about £600 million this last year, despite the fact that they get 24% more funding per person than anywhere else in the rest of the UK. So basically most of these cuts that go through are due to the financial incompetence of the parties at Stormont. And basically what the Secretary of State has announced is that rather than having to pay it all back in 1 year, which would be the normal process in terms of the devolved settlement, there's going to be a bit more flexibility in paying back over 2 years. That's still going to lead to cuts because of the problems that have been taking place in the past with the parties at Stormont being incompetent. Basically, the main issue that we have is that despite the fact that we get 24% more funding per person than the rest of the UK, we don't have the likes of
high tuition fees. We don't have the likes of water charges. We have significantly lower rates or council tax than the rest of the UK, and that means that we don't have the as much money as would be available if we had parity with the rest of the UK in terms of those things for public services. And the parties basically decrying the cuts, but then when it was suggested having more means of raising revenue locally, we're also decrying that as well. And you have to pick one or the other. You can't just expect Westminster to be available for your own financial incompetence. Not anyone here, but that's ridiculous.
Anyone else on this? Back to Dermot, maybe?
It is very interesting to note that quite a lot of the overspends came after the storm collapse, and also came as a result of the fact that the Tories decided to collapse the economy under this trust, because that really went well. A lot of the costs have come as a result of pay inflation, because, you know, inflation shot up alongside, you know, Tory mismanagement of the economy. So it isn't simply down to the economy of the storm, but also down to the fact that there was a PM that decided that the economy had to be shot in the face.
President Emeritus.
With that in mind, the economy's in a bad state. Obviously, the budget coming through could be argued as, you know, there's massive cuts and things like that. Could it be that the answer to all of these problems is to get back quasi working? he could be the person to fix all of this.
Special endpoints of Northern Ireland.
I think so. I think that that's what we should do. We should get quite a lot of that. What do you
want to do? I have a counter. So,
this is my preference
in your room.
Barry?
I was also using the Snapchat. I had an opinion on this. I asked it to tell me a story about Dermot Hamill, the infamous rat catcher, to which once upon a time, there was a man named Dermot Hamill who lived in Belfast, Northern Ireland. Do you not think that it's shocking because AI knows who Dermot Hamill, the man sitting next to me, is?
You know what I actually find more shocking about the context of this? I was trying to write an essay at 12:30 at night last night when all I hear is Rory on the phone to Dermot last night screaming, "It knows who you are!"
I just want to point out that I was just about to get the seat and I get a phone call from Rory Sparrow and go, "Here, have you written enough of your speech tomorrow? Here, I'm going to say I." Yeah, that's good for the water. At like 12:30, pushing 1 o'clock at night, while I'm sat there going, "Really, I want to see
please." This is really a question, more of a statement. I asked the app, "Who is the current president of the Liturific?" And it said, "I do not know who the current president of the Liturific is." And then I asked it, "Is it Tolshewitz Baron?" To which he replied, "I don't know." So, if you're, don't maybe know the app what you are.
Got it. That's because I don't have one.
That's
I'm going to have to get one so it knows me. Any other questions? Yeah. Okay, now we move on to the vote of prior opinion. So if you agree with the proposition tonight and you would not fight for king and country, please raise your hand now.
What
is
it?
Oh, I'm not fighting.
With the opposition, and you would fight for King. No, you can't. Is that just four? Rory, four. And if you'd like to abstain on the motion, so you don't agree with either side.
Alliance for us.
Two, three. Okay. Can I have the vote of prior opinion?
Yes.
74, 4 against, and 3 abstentions. So the proposes.
Yes.
Yes, they do. So, first of all, rules. So each speech is 7 minutes long. The last and first minute are protected time, which will be signalled by the bell over there, meaning you can only POI people in the middle 5 minutes. If you want a POI, please raise your hand, and please keep your POI to 10 seconds and wait wait at least 15 seconds between POIs to give another one, and lastly, no swearing, because now I can fine you bottles of port if you do swear. So, with that, I would like to welcome Rory McSporran to open the proposition.
Members of this lovely house, I have been compulsively lying to you all about how meth makes you bulletproof. It does not. The opposition may want you to think that if you smoke meth, you could become bulletproof, but you can't. I am going to talk to you tonight, first and foremost, about the human cost of war. I'm going to paint a scene for you of an artillery cannon hitting a human. They explode. The opposition wants you to explode. They want you to go away. They want you to fight. Risk your life, lose your legs, lose your arms. Ruin your own mental well-being. And ultimately explode. Because artillery comes.
On that point?
Yes.
Yes, I want everyone here to explode.
They admit it. The opposition admits that they want you to die and burn in hell. Furthermore, we must consider the there would be academic costs of war, because all of our academics would have to be blown up. We must consider the economic cost of war. Once again, academics are friends, because they take the money away from academics, from healthcare, and considering the new Tory budget, which is apparently going through a lovely war we fight on, not be that fun to, you know, deal with, seeing as they're already taking all our money away. Now they're going to fix all our money into the war. Like, yes, Mr. Sands?
Do you believe that academics exploding is more detrimental to the economy than the Tory vote?
What? If all of our academics exploded, they'd be exploded. Yes, it is. We also must consider the moral cost of war. So, you've got just Ad Bello, just In Bello, just Post Bello, okay? So, you've got our lovely king and country fighting a war against, let's say, in Iraq, against lovely... citizens... You're gonna have to stick with me here. This is going somewhere. It is going somewhere. How can we be sure that our country will actually maintain these values of, you know, actually not going to war, but not stressing every opportunity, putting it to the last resort, actually having a good cause, actually having valid authority? I'm going to be honest. One of the arguments that the opposition will try make, that it's a religious factor that we have to support king and country. But the thing is, well, let's look at the UK as a whole. You've got Scotland, you've got Ireland, you've got, just inside the basic parameters, you've got England. There is multiple churches in all three states. You have, in Ireland, anyway, there is about a 50-50 preside between Presbyterians and Catholics. Neither of them would recognise the religious authority of, guess what, our good old king. The Scottish, they do not either. The only people who really do would be Anglican Church of England members. So when we push back and we actually consider, does the king have the authority for us to fight against? Why would he have the authority?
On that point?
Yes.
I once, a few years ago, went to the synagogue in North Belfast, and there they, because part of their religion, they're required to say a prayer for the sovereign of the country in which they preside. So therefore, the king does have ultimate authority over more than just one religion. And just regardless of our religion, we should all, submit to the king.
Would you not say that is more of a like that is one religion, that is one group of people wanting to do that. Not all religions have to do that. You also look, let's say we go back in time, there has been countless opportunities, countless times where, let's say, Catholics, to get emancipation, they decided to show their loyalty to the crown, fighting in their wars. 40% of the the army of England during the Napoleonic Wars was Catholic.
On that point?
No. Wait, yes, yes.
So you're saying Catholics fought French? I thought that would be a brilliant stance.
Yes.
It's
a good little stance, I guess you just say, because of the French, but it still shows that... What am I talking about again? No. It still shows us that, yes, we show that anyway, Catholics were showing loyalty to achieve something, but then what happened? An increase in radicalism against the crown, because people believed we should achieve emancipation we should have the right to emancipation without having to fight for our country, without having to show loyalty to the crown. And when you've got these conflicting barriers between the people of what they want to do, it is not right to ultimately say that they should all go to war. Also, if we look at the moral impacts of war, it ruins communities, it can destroy cultures, many war crimes happen, atrocities, and if we don't have a just war, which is basically impossible to achieve, what is the point in going to war and fighting for our king? In conclusion, I urge you to consider the true total cost of war before blindly following what the opposition tells you. They may want you to feel a sense of loyalty or patriotism towards the king, however, put that to the side and actually consider the benefits that would be brought to you, little to none, of getting blown to pieces. Bye bye.
Thank you for that really good speech, and I'd like to welcome and I'd like to welcome Diamond Hawk from the Austin.
Well, I'm honoured to follow such an elegant speech and so well researched. Madam President, members of the proposition, members of the opposition and members of the House, I stand before you today at the final debate of the 174th session for the motion this House would not fight for King and Country. 1933, as the President has already said, the Oxford Union debated a similar motion, which unfortunately passed. The Literific followed later, defeating the motion and declaring that it would indeed fight for King and Country. I only hope history repeats itself. Most recently, only 2 months ago, the Oxford Union debated the motion again, with the opposition there making some pretty good points, one point of which I've reused in my attempt to bat down my 3 or 2.5 particularly experienced and passionate speakers on the proposition, however crazy their stances are on the issue. The phrase King and Country may seem antiquated or outdated to some, but it represents something much more deeper than a mere allegiance to a political entity or a particular monarch. It represents a commitment to defend the values and principles that have shaped our society and allowed us to flourish as a nation. These values include democracy, freedom, the rule of law, and without those, our way of life is at risk. But I'm going to start on an unusual footing for a debate like this. Before telling you what I want you to consider when voting on this motion tonight, I'm going to start by asking you to rule out considerations that you may naturally have automatically chosen to make after hearing what the proposition has got to say. Now, the opposition tonight, maybe with the exception of Mr. Maguire here, are not asking you to actually enlist in the British military or any military for that matter. I'm certainly not asking you to skip the usual society social laveries following the debate in favour of heading down to the barracks in Lisbon to collect your uniform, as I'm sure Mr. Hamill here would love to do. I'm not asking you to imagine yourself in any capacity in the middle of a war zone protecting your king, country, and ultimately your fellow civilians. On the current trajectory of international relations, technology, and modern warfare, it's highly unlikely that anyone in the room will witness the horrors that our predecessors have at war. It's also highly unlikely that any of us will be forced to serve their country with distinction and lose their life in the process. Indeed, I'd be surprised if we ever saw a conflict again in which the UK participates and requests its citizens en masse to join the armed forces in the same way we did in World War II, for example. But what I want you to focus on tonight is something that is central to our way of life, that the United Kingdom, or whatever state you happen to reside in, needs people who are fundamentally willing to put their life on the line to defend the citizens within it, the way of life those people lead, and the values and principles that are the bedrock of our society, whether or not that is you personally. These aren't just flowery words or rhetoric you'd find coming from the opposition, but not being willing to fight for these values has real-world consequences. Our democracy, the rule of law, the ability to enter this room tonight and speak your mind about any government or leader, are your basic day-to-day freedoms, like, are they not worth defending? Are you really going to let the Rat Whisperer, HLM, Drury McSparran, or above all, President Emeritus McCormick, who couldn't even defend our own beloved society, from conflict during his time as president, leads you down the garden path and into a situation where our glorious United Kingdom finds itself unable to defend itself against an aggressor? Just look at Ukraine, a country that, since the fall of the Soviet Union, has had an increasingly improved democratic system, general freedoms, and a market economy. But upon Russia's invasion, all of those were put on the line. It's down to the brave men and women of the Ukrainian armed forces, most of which have been drafted in to protect their way of life. And I think we can all agree that they've risen to that challenge amazingly. However, I think we all assembled here tonight are particularly lucky to live within a country with a well-established armed forces. The ability to invest and develop world-leading military equipment. And a nation that is a member of NATO, a powerful military alliance that ensures collective defence. But I feel when we're watching the news or discussing world affairs in any context, we take it for granted that the existence of such force and the existence of the force that protects our fundamental way of life is like 100% dependent on the men and women who choose to dedicate their lives in service. No. The men and women who serve in our armed forces come from all walks of life and all parts of the country, but they share a common bond, a willingness to sacrifice their own safety and comfort to protect the freedoms and values that we all cherish. But by voting on this motion tonight, you are rubbishing the idea that we should fundamentally have people who are willing to protect us against aggressors. Personally ruling out defending your life, your king and your country under any circumstance is the same as saying that you don't mind what way of life you have and that the conditions you live in aren't important to you. But I want to conclude with this. Go on.
So could you disconnect this from the king? Couldn't we say that this house would, fight and die, whatever it is, for comfort? For our country, as opposed to for our king and country, or is one intrinsic to?
Well, when the motion was originally created in Oxford in 1933 and debated, they used the king and country as just the slogan for you would fight for your country in a war, and that's what I'm alluding to. I'm not saying that exact commitment to the monarchy or anything else. It is about fighting for your fundamental rights. For your country, in the country which we live, which is the United Kingdom. But I want to conclude with this. We live in a democracy and a free society and one without mandatory military service. We can choose whether we want to enrol in the armed forces. But don't look at the motion before you tonight and think this is anything about you personally taking up arms. It's about the fundamental principle of whether we like the society we live in enough to want to defend it. Let's not destroy the legacy and sacrifice of the over 1 million soldiers who laid their life on the line in World Wars 1 and 2 so that we can stand here free today. And above all, don't trust Rory McSparran with the defence of our nation. God save you.
Say that HLM just looks nice, doesn't it? But I have two of them, so go fucking shut. Right, that was an interesting speech from Daniel, except it ignores the motion. Because it is not, some people should fight for king and country, and we kind of believe that. or the army should fight for king and country, or the army should fight for country, or anything like that. It was this house would fight for king and country. This house. That means all of us. We are this house. We are the house. And I'm going to be honest, I wouldn't trust this house to defend king or country. I mean, look at Rory McSparran. Would you trust him? I wouldn't trust him. No, I wouldn't trust Rory to defend me on a night out. Particularly while looking like a member of the EDL. I certainly wouldn't trust him to fight for king and country.
On that point?
Oh, you look like you deal as well. So we've dealt with this house. Let's deal with King. Because again, we cannot simply divorce parts of this motion from what they really are. We have to look at the motion in itself. So, King. Sausage fingers himself, King Charles III, defender of the faith and all that jazz. I wouldn't fight for him. I would fight for him, but I wouldn't fight for King Charles, because we haven't really seen him as a leader yet. But say divorce it from specific monarchs, let's look at what a king does. A king leads. What we do is we fight for a king, we fight for a leader, we fight for someone we all look up to. But we have all seen so much dysfunctional leadership. How can we fight for a leader? How can we do that? No thanks. We have seen the dangers of paranoid leaders, those that politically shadow box, those that look for threats that simply are not there. That is a dangerous thing to do. We cannot fight for king. And let's fight for country. Let's talk about that. I mean, no, this place is shit. No. Why would we fight for it? One of the worst performing economies in the G7, one of the worst performing economies within the United Kingdom. This is awful. Why would we fight for it? Why not emigrate? Have you ever seen Australia? They've got beaches. No. This place is awful. Who wants to fight for this? At least if you go to Trinity, you know, they have a nice big debate in society and everyone's nice there and they've all got quite sexy curtains. But, sorry you don't, but you know, other people do. It's alright.
Really?
What are you joking, Pat? But what we must do when we look at this motion is not fight for king and country. If we're going to fight, if we must fight, let's fight for ourselves. Let's not fight for king, country, some jingoistic notion of following a leader or following a nation. It's rubbish. Fight for yourself. Fight for yourself the way Rory McSparran does whenever he lifts me and puts me into a sink anytime I annoy him. It's really not.
On that point.
No. Fight for yourself the way Luke McGuire does whenever he gets into a boxing ring or sees someone that he moderately disagrees with. Fight for yourself the way the SU does by fighting in amongst itself and doing absolutely nothing for your cost of living. Fight for yourself the way the Conservative Party does.
There we go.
Collapsing in on itself every couple of weeks, electing a new leader, and then crashing the economy. Woo. Think of yourself. Think not of the nation. The nation's rubbish. Not of country, not of kin. No way. Why do that? It's rubbish. Fight for yourself. But or don't fight. Look at us all. We're quite scrawny and awkward and... I mean, no. Stop trying to fucking POI me. I'm on your team. No, I won't get you bottom for it. Don't fight for yourself. Don't fight at all. But do not fight for king and country. Do not fight for president. Do not fight for president emeritus. Do not fight for anything. Simply run. Let us all emigrate. Let's all go to Australia and America where everything's nicer. Let's all go to Bermuda if we must, or, you know, South, no, or South Dublin where, you know, everyone's nice and loaded and, no. Don't fight. Screw fighting. Fighting sucks. Peace and love. You know, discourse. Stop trying to POI me. I'm on your team. Are you thick? Yes.
Could you not, so you wouldn't fight the Nazis in World War II?
Oh!
Is it from the South Double?
Well, that's exactly what our citizens did, so...
Exactly.
I'm gonna be honest, do I look like I'm exactly fit to fight for a Nazi? Like,
fight for a Nazi?
What, fight against the Nazis? Like, look, I am quite a skinny guy. You know, I'm quite scrawny. I'm not gonna be much good in a fight. So why would you send me to fight the Nazi? What? I want my coordination. No, I would... I couldn't fight. Other people maybe either are great at that. They like fighting amongst themselves and whatever. You know, like the SU. Send the SU to fight the Nazis. But as I said, do not fight for a leader, do not fight for a nation, do not fight for yourself if you don't want to fight, or do whatever you want, but do not fight for king and country. Stand up for yourself, follow no jingoistic leader. Endings are funny little things, and let us not end our lives. Let us not let it sneak up on us, as all funny things do. Let us be ourselves, let us live in peace, in harmony, let us be happy, let us all go to the pub after the debate, preferably not Lavery's at £6 a pint. Let us be happy, and Daniel McCormick owes me a tenner. Thank you very much.
So many notes. It's the most notes I've ever brought to the debate.
Smart little
clever guy. Evening. There is only one thing on my mind when I think of this motion. War. War has but one goal: your opponent's total destruction. Because it is only by his total destruction that you can ensure that he will not revenge himself against you.
Explain.
Good man. Good man. He gets it. Now, to quote Karl von Clausewitz, war is a dangerous business. The mistakes that come from kindness are always the worst. Now, what is the best method of engaging in a war? It is to have a deep love for your country. For something particular, actually, but something tangible, your country. Yes.
To ease Dermot and throwing off what Daniel said, could you answer me this? Do you think a more apt motion would have been this house would become a drone pilot?
No. Don't be silly. Yes. So something tangible, like an actual country, like the people beside you, your fellow countrymen. So you actually have a reason to fight. That isn't some abstract liberal idea like democracy. So you have an actual tangible friend beside you, to the left of you, to the right of you.
On that point?
No. So it is. Now, I am saying I hate democracy. And I will use the argumentation from Socrates. Socrates believed that society was like a ship. If it was sailing through a harsh storm, like a war, would you have anybody in charge that everybody just elects? Or do you want someone who has expertise from his birth? He has been trained to do this thing perfectly.
On that point!
No.
On that point!
No. So it's... He's been trained to do this thing perfectly. Would you trust that man, Captain It, or would you trust me, Captain It? If someone managed to elect me. Voting is a skill that must be taught. Letting citizens run things. Stop asking. Hush. Now, this is not to say that I'm elitist. Rather, I believe in rationality and wisdom.
God. I believe that if you have genuine reason to fight in a war, you have genuine love for the people beside you, and you have genuine love for the leader of the country, the sovereign, the king, you will be the most dangerous fighting force in the world. I told you to stop! Now, how must we win this war? No, stop asking. Stop. How must we win this war? We must be savages. We must be vicious, ruthless, but we must be controlled. We must be sophisticated. We must be a sophisticated savage. We must have a king who embodies the spirit of our nation, who can call, no, who will hold us back when we are going too far, maybe committing war crimes. Who knows? It was once said, Machiavelli's the prince, that when you defeat a king, you cut off his head and you be audacious. You tell the next leader what you're going to do to him, so that inspires fear in the hearts of all other nations. Because there's only two principal motivations of man. Love and fear. No. We must inspire love for your country. Love for your king. Love for your fellow man within your nation. But to ensure that the safety that our well-meaning liberal Dermot has.
On that point.
No. This is not a democracy. To defend these people, we need genuine, genuine leadership. Nothing elected. We need a lifetime person.
On that point.
No, I told you to stop, sweet Lord. Sweet Lord. I would say that we should fight for King and Country and God and Ulster. Now, how you defeat your opponent, because that's all the world is. The world is just a power game. That's all world politics is. The politics is essentially the Whore of Babylon. It's fake, it doesn't really exist, it's boring, but seeing it has to be done, it must be done through power means. It is better to be feared than to be loved by other countries. The only way to ensure safety of you and your South Dublin friends is to ensure that every other country is so terrified that the opportunity of any war against us would be seen as terrifying. So it's reputation is at the heart of our country. So we will win. We will overcome. People are fickle, hypocritical, and greedy of gain. This is why we need someone who is divinely inspired. This is why we need church and state together. This is why we need a king who, there will be a control on him, of course. Pope Francis. Pope Francis is the greatest military leader to have ever existed, because he fights much like we do tonight. God is on our side. Do not believe these heathens in front of you. They will burn in the eternal flames. Come to heaven with us, or we will kill you.
Thank you, Luke, for this speech. Rising to merit is Daniel McCormick to close the proposition.
Okay, so I was going to start with this, I was going to go into it. Leaders, they're funny little things, but I think I'll go off slightly and actually address the two previous speakers. I think that this is important is because I've seen, you know, couples in counselling and things like that where, you know, they have immense disagreements, and I think that there's some stuff to work out here. And I just want to sort of get to the bottom of it, if everybody would like to join me in this endeavor. So, Daniel, you said we should fight for king and country, for democracy, and for freedom, and for the rule of law. Intangible sort of articles, values, things that we all should believe in, and should rightly believe in. And then Luke got up. And Luke said precisely the opposite. And I wonder exactly what you're arguing for. Now, what are you trying to convince the people in this room of? You're trying to convince them that we should fight for king and country. We're making a compelling argument. My God, it was compelling. The fundamental of it is that you basically want to make a case to convince these people that they ought to fight for king. No, not yet. One real key thing here is that you're talking about values on one hand and you're talking about God on the other. And what I'd really get down to is that though we can agree on the values, I really wonder, and I'm sure you all wonder, what happens in countries where there is no monarch, no sovereign, no divinely inspired individual to rule us all to some sort of a military dominance of the world, which... I'll not get into that yet. Look, in countries where that doesn't happen, I don't know where you guys are getting this, you know, or you guys are sort of pinning them down. Are they countries without any sort of unifying factor? Say, for example, a country that's currently in conflict without a monarch. What country is this? It's Ukraine. So, you made the example of Ukraine. One second. You've taken the example of Ukraine. Country without a monarch, and you've turned around and gone, look at them, they are fighting. You gave them as an example of a country all fighting for these values, these central values, without a monarch. So is it one or the other? Can you protect your king and country in the spiritual sense that Daniel argues for? Can you do that without the king? And if you can, then why are you defending the statement of king and country? It doesn't make any sense. Sure.
To very quickly address both your points, mm-hmm. I feel like the strategy on the opposition here is to make two completely separate arguments and hope that at least one of them appeals to everyone. The second point is that king and country is a reference to the United Kingdom, of which I'm sitting there, therefore, and it was also in the motion. But as I said in my speech,
okay, look, you're arguing for king and country, that's fine, that's a reference to the United Kingdom, but your argument goes king and country, and what does king and country mean? It means these values, but that's what you said. You said it was these spiritual, these intangible elements, these values that we should all appeal to, that are intrinsically somehow connected to king and country, but now you're arguing that that's not connected to king and country, in which case? I would be sitting with you, Daniel, I'd sit in your lap if we were arguing for the values of a country and we were saying that democracy and freedom and rule of law were the things in which we should be pursuing. But unfortunately, that's not what you're arguing for. What you're arguing for is for king and country. And that's where you come in, Luke. And so, when you're arguing for king, okay, fine. He's divinely inspired, he's going to rule us all, and he's going to, you know, bring us to something phenomenal. Now let's just turn around and see my notes. You said that he was trained to rule us all in a wartime scenario and bring us to victory and what have you. Trained by who? And I think the answer is trained by God. Is that the answer you're proposing?
The Roman Catholic Church.
Okay, and I'll let you all make up your mind on that one. One other note, something that Dermot slightly tripped up on. You thought you had a real good one. Is would Dermot, in his pacifist argument, fight for the Nazis? No, that's not what he's fight. You said fight against the Nazis, wasn't it? Well, that's a key difference. I'm glad you corrected me on that. Actually, it's because we are saying that you should not fight for some either spiritual, you know. sort of this embodiment of this spiritual value. And we're not saying that you should fight, hold on, we're not saying that you should fight because the king is in touch with God or whatever. What we're saying is that you should fight against, in that scenario, against evil, against something that's against ourselves. One second. You should fight against it. You should not fight. What we're saying is that it's a principle of just... Okay, sure, go.
Well, he said don't fight at all. You're saying...
kind of fight for some reasons, not King Country though. So where's the logical coherence here?
Okay.
And if you're accusing us of the same thing.
Well, that's fine. No, that's fine. For one, I'd say that ours is a small crack in the street and yours is a fuck off chasm. But one thing I would say beyond that is that, look, we're arguing for pacifism in terms of declaring war for reasons such as uniting our country under the union that we once existed under. We're saying that military occupation of sovereign nations in order to take over those nations, like, say, one Mr. Putin right now, we're saying that that's pretty unjust. Fighting in aid of an ideal, as opposed to protecting an ideal. It's a self-defense argument, fundamentally. It's an argument of just war. You can disagree with that all you want, but you're arguing that, you know, the king has God-given right in order to declare war on whatever he wants. And by that logic, if the king turned around tomorrow and said, fuck it, the rest of Ireland, we just want that, and just turned around and went, right, we're going to declare war on that, and we're just going to walk on in, and that's going to be grand. And anyone goes, why? Then he's going to say, God told me so. Okay. That's a pretty thingy argument. I wonder how many people would be running to the base in Lisbon to go and get their uniform in order to invade the rest of Ireland in order to serve their king and their country if they are not intrinsically linked. Ladies and gentlemen, which again, half of these folks have said they aren't, and the other half has said that they've been talking not to the king, and they're not talking about the king, they're talking about God. It is nonsense. It is incomprehensibly silly, let's say that. To fight for king and country, to fight for those values, let's say, to fight for democracy, freedom, and rule of law, they don't have a monopoly on it. If you believe in that, you can still vote with us. You can vote for pacifism, you can vote for peace, and you can vote for democracy, freedom, and rule of law separate from their God and their king. Thank you very much.
Just talk to other people.
You now owe the House a bottle of port, which we have presented in October. And I'd like to welcome Ryan Wee, HLM, to close the opposition.
Thank you, Madam President. Ladies and gentlemen, despite there may be some inconsistencies on my side, but despite that, I think the proposition has failed to make a convincing case for not fighting for one's king and country. Now, I think it's clear to see why President Emeritus McCormick is in favour of this motion. As someone from Donegal and a Free Stater, and he asked in his speech, why does it have to be king and country? Why can't we have a country? What happens in countries when you don't have a king? And what do they do when this great evil comes towards us? And I was just thinking, well, there is another state on this island who, when faced with the same monstrous tyranny of the Nazis, now I think it's clear to see, they remain neutral and indeed signed the book of condolence at the German representative of Dublin on the death of Adolf Hitler.
On that point,
go ahead.
Do you really want to make the argument that any country without a king, by the way, America, is one that would make the mistakes that Ireland did, and by God, I'm not defending those mistakes. Do you really want to make the argument that the only reason why England was fighting against, or Britain was fighting against the Nazis and their great evil, was because of the market fund?
Yes. And there was a lot of slander of Ulster in Dermot Hamill's speech as well, just to go on to the other people on the proposition. And I think that was very out of character. Very out of character indeed. The Lord Carson would be extremely disappointed in him. And we had lots of the stuff about Ulster shite, why should we fight for Ulster? I'll tell you, Dermot, we should fight for Ulster because Ulster will fight and Ulster will be right. Now,
on that point,
go ahead.
Actually, whenever that phrase is uttered, and whenever the Lord Carson, King Councillor, raised a fighting force, he actually did so against His Majesty's government, so he very much showed he wasn't for fighting for king and country.
We will fight for king and country, we will fight against king and country, we will fight no matter what the circumstances. Now,
yes.
No, that is barricade. Now, The people of this country that we stand in today in loyal Ulster have always been willing to fight for king and country, and sometimes, when necessary, to fight against king and country. But during the times that it matters the most, we have fought for king and country in the First World War and in the Second World War. And there's a few reasons for that, for this. There are five reasons, actually. Where are the reasons? I've lost my reasons. There is duty. There is freedom. There is national security. There's patriotism, which Luke touched on brilliantly as a proud, proud patriot that he is. And there is historical precedent.
On that point?
Go ahead.
Is any of that intrinsic to the king? And if so, why?
Because the king is the embodiment of the nation. He is our sovereign, and we should remain loyal to him. Now, there's a moral obligation to stand up for our country and protect it from harm. And by doing so, we fulfill our duty as subjects of His Majesty the King. We have a responsibility to contribute to the well-being of our country and of our fellow subjects. This includes defending our country against external threats and preserving the values and principles that make our country great. Which kind of... I'm tying together these two points here, because Daniel talked about the values that make us great, and Luke talked about the power of the king. And these two things actually fit in neatly together, if you just think about it. Just sit there. Think about it. Reflect on it. Reflect on it, and you will come to the right conclusion. The second point is about freedom. And freedom is interconnected with the sovereign. He provides us with freedom. He offers us comfort. And he provides us with everything that we hold dear. Without those willing to fight for king and country, to defend against these threats to our freedom, we lose our very way of life, as Daniel said. And these things tie in perfectly. Go ahead.
Do you think it was completely justified then when soldiers for king and country went and fought and invaded Iraq?
Yes. Because they were protecting our national security, which comes on to the next one. We need oil for our national security. It powers the nation. And that's what they were doing. They were standing up for our national security. They were willing to take up arms for his majesty, not to deter against aggression, but to ensure the prosperity of our country. It's essential. And hard power is also vital. No, thank you. Hard power is also vital for ensuring the UK remains a global leader and maintains its position of influence in the world. Ensures that we can illegally invade foreign countries. Go ahead.
Does the king get all of these rights from God?
Yes.
Which God?
The true and righteous God.
Which God?
It's just God. There is only one God. Surely you must know this. Right. So, I say to you, ladies and gentlemen, we have before us an ordeal of the most grievous kind. We have before us many, many long months of struggle and of suffering. You're asking, what is the opposition's policy? I say, it is to wage war by sea, land and air, with all our might and with all the strength that God can give us, to wage war against the monstrous tyranny never surpassed in the dark, lamentable catalogue of human crime. This is our policy, you ask. What is our aim? I can answer in one word. It is victory. Victory at all costs. Victory in spite of all the terror. Victory, however long and hard the road may be. For without victory, there is no survival. Let that be realised. No survival for the British Empire. No survival for all that the British Empire stood for. No survival for the urge and impulse of our ages that mankind will move forward towards its goals. We on the opposition take up our task with buoyancy and with hope. I am sure that our cause will not be suffered to fail amongst men. At this time, I feel entitled to claim the aid of all, and I say, come then, let us go forward together with our united strength. Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Ryan, for that speech, but you will also have to be fined a bottle of port.
Do I have to give that one back now, then?
Well, no, to the next meeting. To the next meeting, if you're even there. The next meeting you attend. So you'll never be back. No. So anyway, now we have time for some questions. So if anybody has a question for the proposition.
We're very curious.
Any questions for the proposition, please raise your hand now.
Such inquisitive folk you are.
Some of the arguments for proposition tonight seem to go against the King Charles. But I would ask, if we had a different king, perhaps a more personal king, perhaps a king who never did anything to me, would you fight for king and country under one party of power?
That's a brilliant question from the I think what you fail to remember from my speech was my focus on leadership and how it isn't just sausage fingers himself, but anything, how the dangers of paranoia and poor leadership, those that politically shadow box, that look in the mirror and see shadows, and those that cannot open their eyes and see that many are not actually trying to take them out. That is why we cannot fight for a king. To follow the lead of a simple leader of nothing but blind loyalty, it's dangerous, Jack. That is why. Because what we find ourselves doing then is following ourselves into the dark and often tripping up, and we cannot do so. But what you do by doing that is you follow yourself into blind loyalty, into absolute leadership,
yes.
And therefore, the next thing you know, you've lost all your friends, and you're sat in the corner on your phone, unable to do anything. We cannot, of course, do that. You cannot simply fight for a king. It's a dangerous thing to do. King or president, do not do so. Do not fight for a civil leader. Do not be ridiculous. Fight. You know, if you must fight for yourself, but do not just try and follow a leader, no matter what king it is, whether it's sausage fingers or anyone else. Do not do so. Do not be led into any such false line. I say to you, my Ulster friend, sincerely and solemnly, do not be led into any such false line. Stick to your natural roots in greater coalition with yourself and those around you. Not for a civil leader, not for the dangers of that. Don't lead into paranoia. Don't allow yourself to be cooed, you know. Don't fight for king and country.
Opposition to respond?
The Hopkins of Thermopylae. We're sick with shit and piss.
Pork.
Because men were terrified of the foe they were about to face. And the only reason they stood there and defended their homeland was because of their king. Their king stood with them. Their king led them. As you should follow a leader, a king specifically, because without someone who has a life duty to a given role, all you get is demagogues. All you get is people that just want election and power. All you get. All you get is lies, trumped up charges. You need something external to yourself to motivate yourself to do something as horrific and terrifying as war. Because I'm not, no, as Mingles as might say, I'm not pro war. But when there is war, I like winning. I love winning. And winning must be done at all costs. And all costs require decisive leadership and unparalleled motivation. There's nothing better than to motivate you for your values than tangible things beside you. Not just things within you, because you can quit at any time. And if you quit, then the people back at home will die because your opponent is not as nice as you. Your opponent will run over you. Because more than likely, your opponent's going to be someone like me. So I will happily destroy everything in my way to ensure the safety of my people. God and Ulster.
Any questions for the opposition? Jacqueline.
So you mentioned briefly that it's kind of fighting under a sovereign, not necessarily a king, just the head of the country. So I'm curious, in the Iraqi war, what do you think that Bush or Dick Cheney would be the king?
As someone who is a big fan of Dick Cheney, I've watched Vice. It actually gave me a lot of inspiration. I think it'd be Dick Cheney. Dick Cheney would be the sovereign, and he would be crowned king, and that is what he deserves.
King Dick.
Proposition to respond, Daniel?
So, sort of jumping off slightly from your point, in terms of, okay, let's go down Ryan's line of defending Iraq, right? We all just agree on that. I'd say it was an improvement. Now, let's say at that point, Iraq was good and fine and grand. In that scenario, hypothetically, Dick Cheney may well be the sovereign of the Iraq invasion, which I'm sure he'd gladly accept that that charge. In terms of that, right? So, in that scenario, you're sort of turning around and saying, look, that was fine, that was grand, and that was good. And nobody could question Dick Cheney's authority because he got all of his authority from God. But if we accept for a moment that's fine, okay, and he was getting his authority from God and everything like that, in that scenario, how did God talk to the Queen, who talked to Tony Blair, who said we should go into Iraq, how did Dick Cheney and George Bush, given that neither one of them were indeed the sovereign, and God was talking to neither one of them as far as...
That's the question.
God was talking to neither one of them. How did they come to the same conclusion? How did they wisely sit there and go, we should indeed invade Iraq, as is God's will, if he wasn't in direct contact with their sovereign? How on earth did they do it, unless in fact you're claiming that Dick Cheney is the official king of United States of America, in which case they are entirely correct.
They all believe that the Majesty's government.
Well, thank you. That's all I have to say.
Are there any abstaining questions? Questions for neither side? No. Are there any other questions for the
proposition? Can I ask them a question?
Yes.
No, that's not how it works. Noah.
How does the opposition feel that Luke didn't say the most insane thing tonight? It was Ryan.
Proposition response.
I just want to very briefly clarify. Said that God talks to the king, who then gives us all orders, and that's who we should be listening to. Defended Iraq. Claimed that in fact the king wasn't the person that we were all pledging our allegiance to.
So the fact
that God talks to the king is totally moot.
I'm a Mormon. I'm accepting God talking to people.
I did not say the God just speaks to the king. I said very, very, I made this very clearly, the Pope has immense, immense importance.
Would you say the Unwell was wrong?
I would say it should be.
Any questions for the opposition?
Wait, this is like a free opposition question.
No, that was a proposition question.
It was an opposition question.
That doesn't matter.
Why are there any questions?
Are there any other questions for the proposition?
From the proposition, I enjoyed Dermot's argument about how you should fight for yourself.
Thank you.
The king, but he's now operating under the assumption that we are not all of royal blood and are going to become kings ourselves. So if we were to all become kings ourselves, would we then be allowed to fight for ourselves and king and country all simultaneously?
See. That's a really interesting point. Has anyone else in the room met it? I would accept that as a possibility. But he is from Scotland. And he therefore cannot be a royal blood. Because, as we all know, the King of Scotland is an Englishman.
Macbeth.
And he is from Glasgow, and there is no royal blood there. Because royalty is, at least according to Luke, connected to God, and we all know there is no law in Glasgow. So, for the rest of us, for every single one of us in this room, except Christopher Lynch, perhaps, but in the case of the proposer of the question, it must be said that no, you cannot fight for both yourself, king and country, Christopher, because you are not God and you are not king.
Opposition to respond.
Bring in the rosary beads, please.
And to Michael now. This is serious.
I look forward to the day when I become king. I can finally enact my horrific revenge against everybody I disagree with, even the ones I'm spoken to. Especially them. The number one way someone becomes king, becomes anointed, by God, through the Pope, is through conquest. There is no other way to know God's favour than that for you to quite clearly be able to militarily control other people. There is nothing clearer than God's favour than utter power.
Don't, you can't.
We take over other countries.
He has to accept it.
The British. The British government left India better than what?
Look, you keep looking at my eyes as you do this. Listen, you're a cracking fella, but I don't feel that way.
I believe in God, good Catholic man.
On that point. No, it's not POS.
On that point of clarification. Just to clarify, and if you could both chime in, this, which God?
Well, you're saying which God as if there's multiple. The Holy Roman Catholic Empire.
And are there any abstaining questions? Terence, okay.
Just kind of jumped into my head there that you see all these war movies and these bands of brothers and they're all hopping around having a wonderful time in the trenches. They always put down the line that they're fighting for is they're fighting for the person beside them. And there's no talk of kings or countries or anything like that. So I just was kind of interested to see where people were thinking about that.
For opposition to respond first, Rory?
Well, I'm next to Dharma. Dharma already said he wouldn't trust me to fight for him. Because of a part of me too small to fight for. Dharma's like a special version of me. So if I was to fight for Dharma, which apparently I'd die, but what I'm doing, what the artillery can, which I said in this speech, is like a smaller artillery can.
Can I just add on slightly to Rory's point? So, in terms of being blown up and fighting for the person next to you, that's precisely the argument that we're making. Realistically, you're fighting for the person next to you as opposed to, and preferably not fighting at all, rather than fight for the king who, again, were we fighting for the king's one? Would that be the case? Were anyone fighting for the king would be right there beside them. And I defy any king to go and stand beside the soldiers fighting for them at the time. And I defy any king to do it.
Opposition to respond.
I've been told by Mr. McGuire here as part of my response that I'm going to point out that your account of Dermot's argument, of you accounting just now of what Dermot said, isn't what he said. I wasn't listening, I'm sorry, so I don't know, but I've been told to pass out. I suppose in response to Terry's question here, I feel like the motion not only has been played with joke speakers, but it has been sort of, I think it maybe teaches the society good lessons in not reuse options, and the fact that I feel that when, if you actually like listen to what the Oxford Union said on both times they debated it, one more recently, it's not about fighting out of some allegiance to the monarch. It's rather it's about fighting for your country and your balance. So when President Emeritus HLM whatever is was recounting my speech, you were kind of trying to find a connection in my words that weren't there. You were saying how I'm connecting King to the values and etc. etc. That's not what I was doing, and I think that you got the kind of rebut of my speech showing the fact that the reason Oxford had it as King and Country is from the common slogan, but also because everyone sat in the room in the Oxford Union, most people, like a vast majority, were British and would be assumed that if they were fighting to defend their values, they would be would be fighting for the British state, which isn't the case here.
My point wasn't that you were connecting those two things. I was asking you to connect those two things because the statement which you were defending is this house would fight for king and country. That's what you would like us to come to the determination of this evening. And if you cannot convince us that the king in that saying is intrinsic to the values that you were asserting, which was democracy and rule of law and freedom, and if you cannot prove to the people here, maybe you have, that those things are intrinsic to the king, if you can't do that, which you didn't do, certainly, never mind what these two did, if you can't do that, then you have not succeeded in defeating our
army. If that's how you want to find, you'll find that over here. Which shows where, you know.
I think we'll move now on to the vote on speaker ability. This isn't about your own personal opinion. This is about which side you thought spoke best tonight. So if you think that the proposition spoke best tonight, please raise your hand now. Oh my god. Okay. 22. 21? Okay. And if you think that the opposition spoke best tonight, please raise your hand.
For King, God,
Monster. One. Thank you.
You did? I saw it. I saw
Jack voted for us too.
Yeah, I know. I took it away.
Oh, wow.
Can you give it to the
No. Well, I don't care.
Jack, who's going to
And if you want to abstain on the motion and you don't think either side spoke best or you just can't pick.
What is with the treasure?
So the results are proposition have 21 votes, opposition have 7, and 2 abstaining, meaning the proposition have it.
The opposition refuses to accept the result of this election. We will impose our will using the might of sovereign
rule. Perfect. This is not how. Okay,
darling. The last time that at the last debate, Brian Hoy put in a point of order, the society was thrown into chaos. I think we as a house should ignore that one.
No more points. This is
the house is can't rule its own.
Okay.
Can they elect a champion for me to fight, and that is how we'll decide?
I can make a champion.
Oh, yes.
Maybe.
Point of clarification.
Maybe at next week's debate. No.
No, please. No. Please.
No. Please.
No. Please. Okay. On instruction by His Majesty the King, he has ordered us to now go to the fort.
Yeah. Okay, great.
You go on the
stage. That's you.
No,
Paul. Also, everyone come up for a picture. I really hope I didn't die.